This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL, Kenai Soldotna, 91.9 FM. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation. The conversation today is about something that really should be happening today out in the community and is still happening, but is happening in a much different way, of course, as everything seems to go with COVID this year. So we're going to be talking about Project Homeless Connect, which is in previous years, one particular day where everyone met at the sports center and delivered services to our low-income folks and folks struggling with stable housing. This year, though, with all the health concerns and the challenges of being in one place at one time, the organizers of Project Homeless Connect have really kind of reinvented that program in order to still deliver services and still get the information they need, but spread out over more locations and more time. So we're going to hear about that today. We've got Leslie Rohr, who is the executive director of Love, Inc. and also chair of the Coalition with Housing and Homelessness for the Kenai Peninsula. Leslie, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
There she is. All right. We've also got Jody Stewart, who in her day job works for the Department of Corrections, but today is speaking to us as the PR chair for Project Homeless Connect. Thanks for being here, Jody.
Good morning.
Frank, oh my gosh, host fail. I should have asked you how to pronounce your last name. I want to say Alioto. Am I close?
Alioto.
Oh, yeah. I was in the ballpark. Who works at the hospital as a spiritual care coordinator and is also co-chair of Project Homeless Connect. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
And it looks like we have Derek, and as far as I can see, of course, we are over Zoom here. Derek's last name is iPhone, which I do not believe is correct. So Derek, if you can hit the unmute there and introduce yourself.
Sure, yeah, Derek Black, and helping out here. I'm with Freedom House and a church in town as well called Acts 247.
All right. I think we should probably start with explaining what Project Homeless Connect is. I know it's been going on for several years, and many of us have participated or dropped by or at least heard about it before, but there's dual goals, right? Leslie, maybe you want to take this one. There's providing services, yeah. And there's also getting information, which is pretty important for you guys. So why don't you tell us about Project Homeless Connect?
So we have been doing Project Homeless Connect here on the peninsula for 10 years. The program started in San Francisco, and Jody might remember more how long ago it was, but it was a long time ago. And it was a way for organizations who provide services to vulnerable populations to come together in one spot for one day and make it easier for people who are experiencing homelessness to access services. The second part of that is that we were able to do the point in time count, which is a requirement of HUD. It's a snapshot of one day in time. Where did you sleep on the night of January 26th? And that is the purpose of that is to identify as many of our homeless population or those living in substandard marginal shelter. So that's been the twofold purpose of our Homeless Connect event here for the past 10 years.
The value of having that count then, especially through HUD, Housing and Urban Development, they're kind of the gatekeepers of the money, right? The funding for a lot of these services. So the number of people struggling with safe and secure housing kind of equates to how much funding you get for those programs, correct?
That is indeed the case. And for years, I can say that the peninsula has been undercounted, and therefore our funding sources have been very limited and hard to come by.
And homelessness is the term that we're going to shorthand here, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're, you know, living in a camp. It's people lacking adequate housing. Can you talk a little bit about who these programs really serve?
Sure. So people who are living in places not meant for human habitation. So people who live in a shelter because they don't have permanent housing. People who are living in a motel room to get out of the elements. Any number of things could qualify them as homeless. And I think primarily what we see around here are a lot of people living in cars, trailers, campers that really are not meant for year-round habitation.
Gotcha. Okay. So in the past, and hopefully in the future, if we get back to the usual model where you have a day where you can consolidate all the services and, you know, have a volunteer base all at one place in one time and things are all nice and efficient, can't do that this year with COVID. So, and I don't know, Jody, maybe this is a question for you to explain how this is being conducted this year.
I can address some of it. I know that Derek is going to be coming in and out, so I'm going to actually tag team him a little bit on this front part of the question. So part of our efforts is a 2-week time frame, which is different than it has been previously. So normally we'd have a 1-day one-stop shop situation, but this year, because of COVID, we can't do that. So Derek, can you speak a little bit about what the plan is for boots on the ground and going out there?
Yeah, so each location throughout Soldotna and Kenai, Nikiski, Sterling, and down in Anilchik, we have people doing intake and handing out these backpacks that have been assembled. And as they hand those out, they'll be gathering the necessary information that Leslie was speaking of earlier. And then one of those days, coming up on Monday morning, we're going to be going out to a few different areas that we're attempting to identify. Where there are some folks out there living in a less than ideal situations and be able to take the backpacks. And the food bank has been amazing in all of this. And they're providing hot meals and stuff for us to take portably out as well. And so that's how we're doing it, through the drive-through, and then also going out actually into some of the camps, hopefully. So we have a whole army of people that are scheduled out to be able to do that at each of these locations. And the first one here is starting here in just a little bit, right here in Soldotna.
So we're going to lose you as you hop out of your vehicle and go do your more important work today. We appreciate your time. I'm curious, though, the backpacks, you know, in previous years when folks come to the sports center, they're able to receive just kind of a mind-boggling array of services. I mean, there's food, there's clothes, there's haircuts, there's like pet care services. All of this amazing stuff, you obviously can't pack all of that into a backpack. So what are you able to give to people this year?
I might be able to take that a little bit better just because we have been working with all of our vendors that we've had previously. And so all of the vendors, many of them are state and federal agencies. And so they've provided their resources, which generally speaking, if you were to go to the event, would have been paper-based anyways. So those documents, those applications, those forms that people would need to fill out for housing support or public assistance, Medicaid, that will all be provided in the backpacks. In addition to that, our comfort kits, which are consistently part of Project Homeless Connect, will always be a part of Project Homeless Connect, will be provided. That includes the things like sanitary items, soaps, lip balms, hand sanitizers, hand and feet warmers, those types of things. So all of that will still be provided in the backpacks. When you talk about some of the more hands-on items, such as, you know, the haircuts, the massages, the prayer area, that's a little bit more nebulous. We are grateful that some of our vendors have donated vouchers for folks to be able to come in and be able to have those services. And so there will be a conversation during the intake process with folks to determine if that is a need that they need to have met. And then those vouchers can then be shared at that point. We are still also doing shower vouchers and laundry vouchers, which are so important for folks to be able to get a bath, be able to get, you know, their clothes clean. And right now we have not just Love Inc. is open today for the count, but also the Lee Shore Center for anyone that is a victim of domestic violence can go there. And then the Soldotna United Methodist food pantry as well.
And so those are some of the sites that people can come to. I think Derek mentioned somewhere in Nikiski as well. Is there a spot in Nikiski that's participating today?
No, that'll be tomorrow from 9 to 11.
Okay. Quite the logistical network going on here.
One of the other things I know, Jody, you talked about a lot of the other resources. We also have like hats and scarves and socks, some undergarments, some survival blankets, towels. It's been great to see all the different things that have come into Love Inc. as kind of the holding place to go out. And I know on Saturday we also put together, I believe it was about 615 food items. And I see Greg, you're on here. Maybe you can explain too, even a little bit more of what were some of the food items in there.
Yeah, we've got Greg Meyer, executive director of the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank, who probably has not had a full night's sleep nor a day off since last March. Greg, how's it going over there?
We are doing well. It would have been nice to be a little warmer today, but otherwise we're doing great. We worked, it's just been a great community outpouring of support, but we have put bags together that have all sorts of single-use items that are friendly for minimal cooking. So hopefully for folks that have limited kitchen facilities, that those will be really helpful for them. We have the truck set up here now at United Methodist Church in Soldotna. Volunteers are arriving and ready to do the intake here to, and with all the supplies. So we kind of recreated the sports center in the back of one of our trucks so we can get things out to people where it needs to go.
Recreated the sports center without that stale hockey smell, I'm assuming, which is right. Probably a slight silver lining, I guess, to this approach this year.
Well, our trucks aren't always as fresh as roses either, but we'll see how that goes. So, and we also have the city of Soldotna has been so kind as to continue their food program. So we have the food bags to distribute here as well today. And loaves of bread that go, which is part of the normal routine we've been doing since last September here.
Yeah, so Greg, Project Homeless Connect, when it is a one-day point-in-time kind of event, I mean, obviously is an extra workload for you guys, and you're pretty well used to, you know, scaling up to deal with extra workloads. But how does this approach, this kind of two-week sort of spread-out endeavor, affect the food bank? Have you needed extra volunteers? Are you having to, like, shuffle around workload or delivery schedules?
Yes to all of the above, but it's more than us. There's lots of people involved. I'm excited in the regard that if there's blessings that come out of difficult situations, the pandemic connected us as a community on the peninsula this summer. So to be able to do something like this now is so easy because we have made so many friends and so many new relationships throughout the year. So that part of it's been a real easy to do the logistics of that. I'm also excited, well, maybe that's a bad word, but just thinking that this could be a very interesting year to get out into the community and meet the people where they're at versus having them have to travel in. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And maybe Leslie, you can speak to this. So as far as participation in Project Homeless Connect, it's evolved over the years, but it's kind of always basically been the same idea. Folks come at one day and you get the information and you give them services. Do you have any concept of what this approach this year with COVID might do for participation or for reach? Or are you thinking you'll find some new folks, lose some folks? How do you think that's going to go?
I truly believe that we are going to be in contact with more of our vulnerable populations. I think the fact that we are able to be out in so many areas, that we will undoubtedly be picking up people that we would have missed otherwise.
Sounds like for Greg's part of this, this is taking, you know, some extra volunteers, but through a system that's already been developed. For Project Homeless Connect, is this taking new volunteers, different volunteers, using volunteers in different ways? I know you guys usually have tons of people involved to help.
Right. And I think we're using our volunteers in different ways this year. And I know that some of our regulars that have been with us every year are disappointed that they don't have that, you know, one day serving everyone. But we found places for, I think, most everybody who wanted to volunteer. We've been able to plug them into locations and jobs that are meaningful and have an impact.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. And what's going on at your location then today, Leslie? It sounds like you're one of the hubs for this at Love Inc.'s, and you guys are always pretty busy over there as well.
Yeah, but we are always busy. So we are open business as usual today with the addition of three tables set up to do interviews for our homeless population. And we just had a referral come in from the food bank. So, you know, the process is working.
Are you going to be providing the service for the next continuously 2 weeks or just on certain days? Or how does that work for the designated check-in locations?
Yeah, for the designated check-in location, we today is our day. However, because this is a population that we serve on a daily basis, we will continue to collect that data up until I think it's the 2nd or 3rd of February.
Okay. And people who come to Love Inc. are still going to be coming to Love Inc. They just might have some extra questions for them when they're coming in the door.
Right. And making sure that they haven't already answered the interview questions at one of the other locations, because we want to have unduplicated numbers.
Right. Okay. I don't know if this would be a question for Jody or Frank or maybe Derek. The other check-in locations, are there specific schedules for them as well?
So from the 28th, like I stated before, that'll be Nikiski North Star United Methodist Church. That'll be from 9 to 11 a.m. So that location is strictly on that day. We're then going to follow that up on the 29th from 11:30 until 4 at the food bank. So then we're going to be there and having folks volunteer to do intake. On the 1st, we're going to be in two separate locations. We're going to have volunteers of both from noon until everything is gone, we're going to be at the Kenai United Methodist Church. And then from 2 p.m. until everything is gone, we'll be at Nanilchik Senior Center. So the cool thing about the peninsula is we are working in tandem. So while we are doing account and processing things today, Homer is doing the same thing. Seward is doing the same thing. And then we're kind of all wrapping up our standard dates on February 2nd at the Sterling Senior Center. And then, like Derek had stated, kind of peppered throughout, his group of volunteers will be going and putting boots on the ground to locations that they become aware of folks that are living in either homeless encampments or places where they are. And you know, the thing with homelessness is it can look so differently.
Right.
So maybe it's a shed. Where a few folks are staying, or maybe it's a group of camp trailers that have no heat and no running water, but there's like, you know, a dozen people staying in shifts. So Derek is taking that group of volunteers throughout the 2 weeks to try and make contact with them at that point. So those are more on their schedule than a set schedule.
Okay. So this sounds like quite the logistical undertaking, especially as you say, when you throw in Homer and Seward and Anilchik into the mix. Coordination among all the volunteers and the locations is one thing, but how in the heck are you letting your target population know, like, okay, from noon to four on this day, go this place? How are you communicating that?
So I have to give a huge shout out to Greg and the food bank. He came up with a phenomenal idea to get the word out. So we have flyers and we post these flyers throughout the community. All the agencies have them. But he went a step further and took and put the flyers into the food boxes a couple of weeks prior to the event. So that way folks would have it. So I feel really hopeful. I think Greg is too, that we, by doing that, have highlighted what's going on, the schedule of things, and given folks an opportunity to kind of know that we're going to be out there and out and about. And it provides our phone number as well. So if folks have a need, they can certainly call and reach out to us and we can go to them if necessary.
Yeah, to jump in too as well, you know, we have our troopers and our police officers who have had cards. And one of the things I've seen over the years is they've been a great connection. You know, they know our people in our community that have different needs and struggles, and they have great referrals here at the hospital. You know, in the emergency department, we have opportunities to serve some of our clientele and share information. And I know at different hubs throughout our community, from community centers to common frequented stores, flyers have been up and people can hear about opportunities to be a part of the Homeless Connect. And there was one other part too. I know over in Kenai at the Methodist Church, where we'll have a connection point. Kenai Alternative High School is right across the street. And so, you know, if we can even connect with some of the students there that may not have, you know, come to an event, but they see it, oh, it's right across the street from my school. Here's an opportunity for me to get some help or to learn about resources, has been a great touch point for us.
Right. And of course, it's not just adults who are in that boat. Couch surfing kids make up a portion of our homeless population on the peninsula as well. So can definitely see the importance of reaching out to those guys. So reaching out and making sure people are aware of, you know, where to go and when to go and how this is working is one thing. The other part is for folks to be able to actually get there. So, of course, transportation is public transportation. Affordable transportation is a huge issue on the Kenai Peninsula when you're talking about low-income folks and even medium-income folks. Owning a vehicle and keeping it running can be an expensive endeavor. Is there some sort of way to help folks be able to come to these locations this year?
Well, I can speak a little bit about the transportation in the past. We have had a significant partnership with the Alaska Cab organization, and they have donated their services year after year after year. And I'll give a huge shout out to Brent. Without his support, you know, some of the transportation issues that we've experienced would certainly be a problem. And so I know if Brent hears that somebody needs to get to a location for Project Homeless Connect, he will do what is necessary to make sure that they get the ride there and back home. And so that relationship is crucial to what we do. And I can't help but give a shout out to Alaska Cab for that. CARTS has in the past participated as a vendor to share about their low income services for public transportation. But as far as donating rides, things of that nature, they haven't done so much in regards to that. So really, I would have to say Alaska Cab has been our go-to organization that we've worked with.
Okay, great. So that's Brent Hibbert, to give him the full shout out to be deserved there. Frank, was that you wanting to chime in?
Yeah, we've also had churches that have been available to shuttle people over and connect people to the event. I think one of the good parts too of us going out is that, you know, people don't have to travel as far, and most of them, if they've been on the been to the different food pantries where a lot of our stations are, people know about these opportunities. So it's been great that they can even provide their own rides and kind of have a, hey, a step up. I'm going to be available to go do something, or I'm going to look for this ride because I want this to happen. So I think it's also empowering people too, to say, hey, we're going out to you, you know, meet us halfway, and kind of give people a, you know, a step up.
This might be a good question then for Derek. Derek, are you still on?
I'm here.
Okay, so as one of the volunteers who's going out, boots on the ground, how functionally is that working? Have you been out to these locations before and given them a heads up, hey, at this day and time, we're going to swing by? Or are you just going in cold? Do you have a relationship with these folks in the specific spots that you're going, or how's that working?
Yeah, kind of yes and no for us. In ministry, some with Freedom House and some with our church. We do off and on ministry to folks on the side of the road and identify some of the areas that we have frequented in the past where some of the homeless population is located. And then one of the guys that's going to be helping me with that knows a little bit more specifically himself. Coming from a background of used to be homeless himself. And so he has that connection and inroad in. And so just relying on that somewhat as well as we go forward here the next few days.
Okay. And I would imagine, of course, as folks are being let know about this program, they're would make it clear if they'd rather not be visited or would know to not be available at that time. Anytime you're talking about income levels and social service needs, I mean, privacy, of course, is a big issue there too. So the more people you have involved, and especially when you're going to somewhere someone's living, I would imagine that's a concern to be respectful and to protect people's privacy and all that good stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's an area that we're going to be really sensitive to and careful. And one of the reasons why part of the places that we're going to be going to is going to be based on those previous relationships that that a few of us have been able to maintain, and for all those reasons that you mentioned there. I don't know if this was mentioned earlier in the call as well. I was out for a bit, but we're going to be at each post. I think Jody mentioned it earlier, and Frank's helped with this in the past as well. But at a lot of the places where there's drive-thrus, be able to offer prayer to those that are interested as well. And we've been able to do that in previous years with Frank at the location over there. So we'll see how that goes also.
If before you move on, if I could add just a couple of things.
And this is Jody.
So one of the really awesome things about Project Homeless Connect that we have started from the beginning is this level of confidentiality. We have forms that folks have to fill out. They have to say that they want to be a part of the process. We never force anyone to participate in a way that makes them uncomfortable. If they don't want to answer the questions, they don't wish to be counted. We recognize that that is their right, and we certainly don't force anyone to do that. That is ingrained in our system, which I think has something to say with our statistics for doing so well in honoring people where they are and how they are. We always get really high remarks from participants on how well received they feel, how heard they're felt, and how welcoming we are and how respectful we are as a team. And all of our volunteers also receive training on how to be able to, you know, ask the questions, be respectful, and be able to respect wherever a person is on whether or not they wish to participate in the process. That being said, we don't deny anyone any of the services that we provide throughout the event, and that will continue on this year as well.
And Jody, can you also speak about, I know we've had the exit interview papers, you know, from our clients. Can you just speak about that and how that has helped shape this event as well?
So there is certain information that HUD requires, and HUD really tells us this is what we have to take as far as information goes. But we also ask questions that are helpful to us as an organization that puts this event on. And so one of the main questions we ask is, you know, if there was a service that we're missing, if there's some way that we can help you, what would you need? So that's been really important. That has given us some really good data and allowed us to outreach to other agencies if they haven't been at the table. Then we ask, you know, how did you feel during the event? Did you feel like you were respected? Did you feel like you were helped? Did you feel that you were cared for as an individual? Again, those stats really matter a lot to us as a group. We also ask folks kind of questions about how they perceive the event, how they receive information about the event, so that way we can more appropriately target our efforts for getting the word out. So I'll be really interested to see how those questions are answered this year, to see if folks were able to hear about the event better, worse, and really, I agree with Leslie. I think our numbers are going to go up just because of the fact that it's over a longer period of time. And I think we're going to have more folks willing to answer some of those questions and give us some guidance on how next year is going to look.
A couple of other questions that we asked are about transportation. What they currently use for transportation, and would they use a public transportation system if it were available? And the other one is a cold weather shelter question, and whether or not they would take advantage of a cold weather shelter if it was available. So last year, about 30% of the 100 and some applicants were willing and would like to have emergency cold weather shelter to use.
Oh, Leslie, you read my mind. I was just going to segue into that, but I should do a quick reintroduction for folks since we're at the bottom of the hour.